Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yagera, Turrbal and Yugrupul peoples, the Yugambeh, Mananjali, Kombameri, Noonuckle, Quandamooka peoples. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you, and welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service, and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you all. It's great to have your company. Another beautiful day, blue sky, sunshine, and no moisture. It's a dry run here around southeast Queensland. I think it's been something like 40 or 45 days or so without rain. So it is dry and we're feeling it, you know, but we'll get there. My dear old mum always used to say, you know, the bad weather passes or things will change. You know, the sun comes out tomorrow. So we'll get some rain will come when it's all due, all good and ready. Today, live in the studio, we have Auntie Little Watson, Auntie Mary Graham. Welcome, Aunties, to the program. How are you both?
Very good, thanks, Tiger. I also would like to acknowledge the traditional owners. And I must add to what your mum used to say. My mum used to say, whether it was pelting down rain or the sun was shining, every day was a beautiful day.
Exactly.
She used to say, isn't it a beautiful day? No matter what the weather was. And it certainly is. Every day is a beautiful day.
No such thing as bad weather.
No such thing as bad weather.
No. Weather is weather. Weather is weather. Yeah.
Let it enjoy every minute of it.
Weather is something about weather.
Well, the fact that we wake up in the morning to enjoy it, that's the bonus, I think. Now, since you were last in, there's been some discussion about identity, particularly on that program on the SBS. Was it Insight? Is it SBS?
Insight. I think it's pretty sure.
I wasn't real happy with that, with the way that was done, and with the narrow view in which identity was seen and discussed. I thought it was a very narrow sort of a view. So I think it'd be a good opportunity, as we've already discussed, to go into identity and explore your thoughts on what identity is, because identity is, there are many different sorts of views, and some are very, very sort of narrow views, but it can be such a broad thing. It's important that we know it's not just something that's for First Nations people. I think identity is important to human beings across the board.
Across the world, yes.
So first up, tell us then, what is identity to you, Mary?
Well, the first thing that occurs to me about identity, that is in a sense, it's like memory, the memory of being in a big family. Now I know that's other cultures too, a big family, and being. I don't know. It's a bit very funny when you're a child. Though, you don't know actually. You take a whole lot of things just for granted. So you know you're Aboriginal, but you don't know how you know. You know, you mightn't even know what that word means, you know. All you know is that you're a member of a big family of a particular name. The name could be Aboriginal name, it could be a Smith, Jones, you know, or whatever. But at some point or another, it's never quite clear that it occurs to you. You know that it's an Aboriginal family and that it means a lot of people. You're not as an individual, you know. And to me, that show on Insight, even though I have to confess I didn't watch all of it, but a lot of it. And they seem to concentrate on colour of skin, and especially on the individual. And to me, from an Indigenous point of view, or these terms of reference that Lila and I have been talking about, it really relies on the... A Western way of looking at identity seems to rely a great deal on the individual, whereas we don't. We are an individual in a purely physical sense, but we find it within the group. So we find our identity within the group.
Where does heritage, bloodline, where does that come into it? Does it come into it?
Absolutely, because you wouldn't even know these things except for others. I am a self, and you are a self, but we don't actually know we are selves, except in relation to other selves. So other selves are, in a sense, telling you who you are as a self. You know, you belong to this mob here, you know, in this place here. And all the cultural, if you like, paraphernalia, that goes with that, actually, everything. You know, the culture of the place, some historical things, it could be all sorts of things. It could be objects, could be stories, could be anything.
Mm.
To me, anyway, that's roughly.
Artie Lil?
In watching that program, I'll come back to that program, I was very disappointed because I did not hear anyone mention Aboriginal culture or spirituality or Aboriginal law, which to me is the foundation of Aboriginal identity. And to me, that was very disappointing. Now, you mentioned heritage and culture. Well, I think that people who've grown up outside of the Aboriginal community and not always been part of an Aboriginal family and make a discovery that they have some Aboriginal blood and want then to become part of the Aboriginal community, I think that's a heritage. And that's good, you know. I think that's great. They want to build their identity and become part of the Aboriginal community. But when you grow up in your culture, I think it's almost like two distinct things in a way.
So those of us growing up in our culture,
yep.
We can claim on that basis, but we also claim the heritage, the bloodline. So that's the two things. But some other people that don't, and there's more and more of it happening every day now.
Yes.
Where there's people have grown up as Australians find out that there's an Aboriginal great grandmother, Aboriginal connection somewhere, and they can embrace that and own that, which is good.
That is good.
Mm-hmm. But to tick the box, being yes, I'm Aboriginal now. Yes. Is not good enough because there's more than that to being Aboriginal.
There's more to that. Much more. Mm. And to me, that's important. Mm. And unfortunately, some people think that suddenly they've got an Aboriginal ancestor that all of a sudden, maybe, they know things all Aboriginal.
And that makes them Aboriginal.
And makes them Aboriginal. Mm. And that's not how it works.
Mm. Mm.
So that's something I think is important for people to try to understand and try to realise what that means. But when it comes to identity, you know, it's not based any longer on the colour of your skin. I mean, that was something that happened way back in the early days when early colonial minds...
Like Tyndale. Well, measuring the size of brains or heads and noses and things like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, maybe how your knuckles to the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
I've heard those sort of measurements too.
Like how far from the ground your knuckles are.
Yes.
They might hang a bit low. They wouldn't want to measure that grandson of mine. His knuckles are a bit close to the ground. He's got short legs because he's got a chondroplasia. He's got one of those dwarfism. His knuckles are a bit close to the ground, so I'm not going to measure on him, my little man.
Little man.
Young Quaden.
So that's, the things they used to do to us, but... That's one of the wonderful things is that we've taken hold of our own identity. Mm. We know who we are and we identify. And I think that this having to get a written confirmation of your identity has caused lots of problems for different people. And it's understandable, though, that it does cause problems. But I think we've all been through it.
Yes,
we've all got that piece of paper.
Yes.
So we've had to. Our children have had to more and more these days.
We didn't have any choice. Yes. And then when someone comes along who's not knowing in the community, then and people say, it doesn't matter how black they look or how Aboriginal they look, people say, no, we don't know you as part of our community. we would like you to go back to your own mob to get that paper signed or a letter from your own community. And yet, in a way, that's correct, isn't it? Because when we meet each other, we identify country and mob, where our country is, who our mob is, where we belong. And in a way, to me, that's quite correct to do that. But it does cause offence to lots of people.
It causes a dilemma, really.
It causes a dilemma. It does cause a dilemma.
Conundrum or something like that.
But particularly those mob that are stolen generation too.
Yeah, that's right, well, yes.
It impacts on them really seriously.
Yes.
It does impact on them seriously. But the link-up programs, I think, are very good helping those people with their piece of paper to be able to consolidate their identity. So I would suggest the stolen generations, you know, go to your link-up people. They're terrific. The link-up people are very good at that, aren't they?
Yeah, become very familiar with them and, I don't know, establish a good relation with them, really, because it's the path of those poor fellows who suffered that that fate. The rest of their life is almost going to be like they're on a path of exploration of all sorts of things, of themselves, of culture, of locality, of ancestorship, you know, and so on and so on. And plus how to deal with it in their everyday life and so on, with their own, if they've got children themselves, you know, and grandchildren.
Those of us that haven't experienced that are very fortunate. We don't realise a lot of times how fortunate we are.
Yes.
I must explain about Link Up for some of our listeners who might not understand what Link Up is. Again, it is another First Nations community controlled agency or organisation that has been put together some 30 years ago, I think they first started out, a long time ago, to assist people to link up with their mob, finding their mob, because of the past policies of past governments where people were removed from families and country, community.
I think the people who started it were Coral Edwards, I think.
Coral Edwards,
a long time ago, and she's passed on.
She was wonderful. She was a wonderful woman. And when she came back into the community, I always remember this. She said, "Do you know, Lilla, I'm..." She was in her 30s, probably maybe her 40s even. She said, "I'm at the stage of a three-year-old in Aboriginal culture." She said, "I'm still learning." And she was very conscious of that and very aware that she had lots to learn. And I thought she was very wise. She was very wise.
People like Bobby Randall.
Yes.
Old uncle from Wurujulu.
Yes.
You know, Brown Skin Baby, the author and singer of Brown Skin Baby. His experience of being taken away himself.
Yes. Well, it happened to a lot of...
Do you think it stopped? Is it still happening?
Well, you know, the recent, there's been a recent inquiry here in Queensland, Queensland Protection Inquiry or something.
But child protection is still happening at the moment, yeah.
That's right. It's a whole range of things about how, you know, the whole thing of child welfare and so on. But a key part of it is, you know, the rates of children being removed from their families, Aboriginal kids, is going up and up and up. And apparently it's like that all over the country. So, you know, it's like, what's that word? You know, back to the what do you call it? It's still here. The past is still here.
The future's going back to the past.
yeah, something like that. So it's like they never learn, you know. They never, ever learn, welfare departments in this country. You know, they know it's a bad thing. It's totally immoral and destroys families to take kids away. But there doesn't seem to be taking kids away for momentary, you know, those sorts of aberrations, you know, the problems in the family and so on and so on. And even then it's a highly judgmental kind of
But even with their own mob, even white with their families, own mob, Australian
that
families.
That seems to be their only answer.
And white kids.
Yes, that's right.
They don't know.
It's a policing kind of style.
Yeah.
That's all they know. They don't
and that
know
began back in
the
back in England. Before they ever came here, they were taking the children away
Absolutely.
And placing
that's
them
right.
in
yeah.
orphanages and yeah. church-run yes. homes and things.
And shifting them from country, from that
yes.
country to
and
other
And then
countries.
Those children were removed
Thousands.
Over here.
Yep. Yeah. But so when you look, I was going to say they've got that blame the victim mentality still. They still are not willing to hand over the resources for the Aboriginal community to be able to work with that problem and solve it themselves.
And you think that's the ultimate answer, the proper resolution of that issue?
It lies in our own community.
In our own community,
but
yes.
It's never, Aboriginal communities are never given the resources or the power to be able to take
to
control
be able to do that, yes.
of that and do it in a way that would benefit not only those children, but the whole community.
Yes. It's always an approach, a police-like approach, a legislative approach. It's either either this way or no way at all. And Aboriginal people or Indigenous people are seen as, well, you can help in this process in a little way, in a little bit.
Yes.
Give us advice, a little bit of advice, or work with us in a... But don't object to the system because you can't change this system, you know, and so on and so on. I mean, they tried to, you know, the old childcare, you know, tried to, in Queensland anyway, the Adoptions, Fostering and Adoptions Act about that at Murray kids have to go, you know, a three-step thing, either first of all with Aboriginal families, failing that, or their own families, failing that, an Aboriginal family, no relation, if it has to be, and failing that, then last resort is non-Aboriginal carers, but someone who's very experienced with Aboriginal, something like that.
Yes, there was a three-step approach, and the last one was that non-Indigenous, non-Aboriginal families who were very aware of Aboriginal culture and they maintained contact with the Aboriginal community for the children that they fostered.
Yes.
Three important sorts of criteria or steps to take, you know, in keeping people...
Unfortunately, they use as an excuse, I think it's used as an excuse myself, they'll say, well, there's just simply never enough Aboriginal foster parents available. Now, they've had a couple of decades to sort that out. You would think they have all these resources and, you know... you know, inventive planning policy people, they would work out a system of training specifically choosing Aboriginal people to train as foster parents. I mean, you could do that with everybody, Aboriginal, non-Aboriginal people too. Properly train, not just go out at random and try and find someone out there in the suburbs.
You're right, that's a good point you make. Yeah. They've had decades to do it,
and
nobody's come up with that at all.
Yeah, they just keep using that same excuse, oh, if only we had more foster parents, oh, well, we'll just have to take them, you know. It's the same excuse that they use today.
Yeah. You know? Let's take a break for a song and come back and pick up on the identity discussion again. When were you ladies... told, and by who, that you were Aboriginal, that you were different to everybody else? I was told at school by those white kids when they saw me black mum come and pick me up in Theodore at the school. You're a black one, you're a boong. But up until they saw my mum, there was a bit of uncertainty sort of thing, you know. When were you told? But then to move on with this discussion where we have some conflicting views or different ideas from people like the lady that was on that program on TV, Bess Price, who can speak a number of languages, who knows as strong as her in her culture, but there's a different view how she and others sees identity and not understanding the struggle of those of us on the East Coast or in an urban situation with a fairer of skin who are... discriminated against because we claim Aboriginality, we claim this identity. There's that conflicting views and misunderstandings there that I'd like to go into. But look, here's a song. My guests today, Auntie Mary Graham, Auntie Little Watson. The discussion is largely identity. And if you want to make a comment or a call, feel free. 3892018. 3892018. And we have a caller, Georgie, on the line. Georgie, welcome to Let's Talk. How are you?
Hello. I'm actually quite sick. I've got asthma.
What would you like to say?
The thing about...
Yes? What would you say, Auntie Mary?
A very strong sense of belonging that most people get from their own family, The interconnections, what does somebody call the web of connections or something like that? I was just doodling here before with a what do you call it? A matrix. What do you call this? A grid system where an individual is placed on that grid, all of us. So we've got all these interconnecting lines via your mother's people, father's people, and so on and so on. But belonging is probably the key to that for all human children, really. Everybody,
yeah.
Regardless of culture.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing they learn, even before they can talk and walk and so on and so on. So no, you're quite right.
Thanks, Georgie, for your call. I'm sorry you've dropped out there. Something's happened. But that sense of belonging, George is on the right track. It's about that sense of belonging, where you belong.
Absolutely. And I think more knowledge or that sense of belonging is kind of like a ready-made stage or something. It's like a stage that starts then, as you grow older, to be filled with things.
Yes.
With language, with all the things that go towards human culture, language, actions,
yes.
Actual relationship, the self with the mother, the self with the father, the various others.
Yep.
All right, we've also got another caller on the line, Louise. How are you, Louise?
I'm good, thanks, Tiger. How are you?
Very well. What would you like to say?
In a way, so I can understand why. In some cases, people are questioning who is Aboriginal and who is not.
Yeah, you know, these things happen.
Yeah, I know. Because, let's face it, you see an Italian and an Aboriginal, sometimes they look the same. Not all the time, but sometimes they do. And if they've got a white parent in there somewhere, they could have the look,
For sure. Yeah, that's interesting. An interesting comment. Okay, thanks for your call, Louise.
You're welcome, Ty.
Okay. Have a good day.
See you, mate.
It what are your thoughts, Artis?
It just makes me smile because when I was at university, there was this young man who came in and identified as being Murray, and all the Murray kids, we were all talking about some. He doesn't really act like a Murray, does he? About 6 months or 12 months later. Mm. When one of our law students was doing his advocacy with a magistrate in the courts, this fella come up and he was charged with a false identity because he'd gotten a Murray name from a grave up in Cairns and put himself down as Murray, took over that identity so he could get that Aboriginal scholarship through the university.
Oh, truly. Honestly.
We've got another caller on the line. Hello, welcome to Let's Talk. How are you?
Not too bad, mate. Not too bad at all.
What's your name?
Yeah, Chris. It's Chris Kelly.
Chris.
I've called you before, mate.
What are your thoughts, Chris?
Well, I actually envy you guys, all of you, the ladies and yourself, Tiger, for knowing exactly who you are. And, I know part of my background and I don't know the rest of it. I've tried to go as far as I can, and I've come up to a brick wall, so at least you know who you are and where you are and where you belong. It's one of those things, isn't it?
It is. We're about to have a bit of a yarn about your sort of situation where, there are people that cannot go back too far or cannot go anywhere with finding out where they come from, who they are, but there is still a place. There is still a sense of belonging that you probably have or can develop. So we're going to have a bit of a yarn about that too, mate.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call, eh?
No worries, Tiger. Catch you later,
on you, buddy. You have a good day. Bye now.
You too.
That's an interesting call also, where some of our own mob, Stolen Generations, but there's also members of the dominant culture who could very well be, have that heritage, Aboriginal heritage, cultural heritage line, bloodline and stuff. But without being able to identify that even, so the sense of belonging, like Georgie that called up earlier saying, I feel it's the sense of belonging. What do you say?
Absolutely.
Like for Chris and people like that.
I always think, that show that's now on, it came from UK, I think, Who Do You Think You Are? Where somebody, usually quite often they're using celebrities, and so on. But that has generated enormous interest, apparently, the one out here too. And I think a lot of white fellas, especially Europeans, they're realising that it's very moving, actually, for them to find out what some ancestor, you know, grandfather, they could only go back to a grandparent, but knew nothing about the life of that grandparent, their previous life. So they're finding all this stuff out. And so it's very moving. But they're finding out really about the importance of relationships, you know, and that's the key part, one of the key parts of belonging too, is that it's the new young self finds out that there is such a thing as relationships and relating, and how important that is to actually, literally, staying alive. Not just being a human being of a certain family and so on, but actually, literally, saving, being alive. Because, you know, we all know, they reckon, small babies, if they're not touched and so on, you're held and talked to and so on, they actually can die from neglect. Physically, what Lil was talking about earlier, it's physical, but it's a spiritual kind of thing too. Mm. They can actually die. But I think people themselves, adults who don't know where they are, who they are, where they've come from and so on, they can actually die a kind of spiritual death too. Mm. I do believe that. You know, yeah. I don't know. But I think all Murrays know that inherently, you know.
But relationships is important. I was talking to a woman the other day who happened to be a white woman, and she said, you know, on the way we do things as white fellas, you black fellas always calling people uncle and auntie, and it might be your mother's brothers and sisters or your father's brothers and sisters who are your auntie in white terms of reference. But she said you will also call other, as a sign of respect, you will also call other elders and people in the community uncle and auntie. Mm. She said, you know, for us white fellas, in her particular experience, when those children knew their mother's and father's brothers and sisters and knew them as auntie so-and-so when they were younger. But when these children grew to be teenagers, those old people didn't want to be known as uncle and auntie. It was first name basis. So you sort of lose that relationship thing. Because of that.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting, an interesting point, because the older mob didn't really want to be.
That still happens with
It is still happening today.
Yes.
And that's what she was referring to. Still today, her old aunties and uncles don't want to be called uncle and auntie by a 50-year-old.
And the danger with that is that it loses that structure within a big family relationship, you know, I believe.
Yes.
I don't mean the structure as in hard sort of notion of a structure, but that linkages. That connection. It's got to be there in some kind of soft way as a background or as a template, you know, to hold up to hold it up. And if they're all on a first name basis, it's like, well, everybody's a separated out individual.
Individual, you know. So the connection is being weakened, and it can be lost.
Yeah, a disconnect starts.
Mm. Yes,
and it's sort of like a slow eating away. You know, it's not a sudden disconnect. It's just
It takes time. Mm. That's right.
Mm. Yeah, it's a terrible thing, really.
So but you think then that sense of belonging is important. If people that are struggling with this identity, because it's so important to us, and like Chris said, he envies us. We know. So for people like Chris, if they have develop that sense of belonging, it doesn't have to start in England or in Europe somewhere for them. If they can't go back that far, it can start here and now.
Yes.
I know when establishing relations. Ever Mary and I do workshops, that's what we try to get non-Aboriginal people in the group to do, to identify somewhere where they actually feel they belong.
Mm-hmm.
And we say that's something you can really build on, you know, and strengthen, not only for yourself but also your family, and pass that on to your family.
That protocol, what we regard as the protocol of introducing ourselves, this is our mob and so on, but in a real a more detailed way, like my mother is so and so, she comes from such and such a country. My father is so and so, he comes from such and such a country. And there might be more to it, languages, all that kind of stuff, and the names they're known by, and so on and so on. But it's a wonderful protocol, but it goes deeper than that, eh? It's a prompt to keep you aware all the time that we have human relations. Not professional roles first. Doesn't come first at all. It's the professional. It's the human nature, you know, that everybody has a mother and a father, even if it's not their actual mother and father. There is a birth one and maybe that's one who's brought them up and so on. And that always has to come first. It's like a reminder. And I think that's a wonderful thing, you know.
I think it's
a wonderful thing. It's real.
It is. It's magic because When Murrays meet,
it's the first thing
you don't ask. What do you do?
Or how much money you make?
You got $20. Yeah. I'm short. Yeah.
If you make that much, you can give me a loan.
We've got another caller on the line. Hello, welcome to Let's Talk. How are you?
G'day, Tiger. Bill here, mate.
G'day, Bill. What would you like to say, Bill?
I'm born in Scotland, brought up in New Zealand, and I live in Australia, and I came from a big family, and it's a wonderful thing to know that the aunts and the uncles have been brought up there. But there is a political agenda that isolates people. Even in the European communities, where the state takes over the responsibilities of the parents, the uncles and the aunts and the grands and the grannies used to do, and they've got a unit, I think it's eugenics they call it, but there is a definite political agenda to destroy families and make them reliant upon the government.
Mm.
And that's not only applying to First Nations folk, it does apply to Europeans. And it's sad that nobody knows about this. Well, there's a few that know about it, but that's a definite plan and political agenda to separate children from their family.
And, yeah. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there too, mate. You're on the money there. Mm. All right, mate. Yeah. Thanks for your call, eh, Bill?
Catch you later, bud.
You have a good day, mate. Another interesting point from another one, a regular listener.
That is true, actually.
Really? Certainly an agenda for Aboriginal kids.
Yes. Mm. And what
to write them removed.
Yeah. What he was alluding to, too, was it is a government, it's like heavily government involved, but to me it's always seemed as if it's at the back of it is an economic importance. Like they reckon the nuclear family came in about the time of the Industrial Revolution. Because it was economically better to do it like that.
Mm.
So they just simply brought all these policies
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
You know,
right.
They didn't have to force people to the point of a gun or anything like that, but they just made all these policies right across government to make it a nuclear family, and that became the norm.
Yeah.
Mm. Because even in the very old days for Europeans, way back in some, you know, we think we invented the word cuz, you know, cuz. Well, that's in Shakespeare's time. You can look at some of those plays, and
it's
you see some. Yeah, they say it's cuz. Yeah, that's yeah. No, so your kinship.
He's a man before his time.
That's right. Yes. He must have been Murray. A Murray Shakespeare. But
not William Shakespeare. Murray Shakespeare.
Murray Shakespeare.
Yeah, right. That's interesting. There's two points I want to explore, and one I've already touched on, where the likes of people like Bess Price are critical and don't understand identity. From our experience, that we are qualified to identify. The other point is, like Andrew Bolt says, you look white, why aren't you identifying with the Scottish, the Irish, the British? So, but the first one.
Well, I'd just like to say in regards to the first one, Bess, what's her name?
Price.
Mm. Price. I think she's a confused lady. Because Mary and I, we talk about Aboriginal terms of reference, and those Aboriginal terms of reference come directly from this land and how we've lived in this land for as long as we have. Everything, our knowledge, everything comes from here. It hasn't been imposed on us from overseas, those people that come from somewhere else and settled here, or, you know, made a place here. And what happens, I think, with Bess Price is she gets drawn over into white terms of reference. And getting drawn over into white terms of reference, she doesn't know which side she's operating on. And that's what comes out of her mouth, I think, is a lot of confusion. She hasn't really consolidated her identity in terms of what she's saying. Because it's almost like sometimes I think it's a husband talking and not her talking.
Well, she's now a member of the Country Liberal Party, got voted in with a very narrow margin of votes. So I do think she's confused.
Mm. She is a confused woman, I think. She doesn't know what terms of reference to operate on, whether she's going to operate on Aboriginal terms of reference or if she's going to operate on white terms of reference. So, unfortunately, I think she's going to remain in that confused state for a while.
Well, it sounds like to me, just going by how she talks, from what I've read, she has taken on board, to me, a very Western term of reference of being very judgmental. straight away being very judgmental.
Yes.
And almost bordering on fundamentalist, actually. This is what Aboriginal people are like. This is how they, you know, and those other people there, you know, Aboriginal people, they're not doing the right thing by blah, 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 do you know? So it's, again, the policeman-like, judgmental kind of thing that force from the outside, like the intervention, has to come in and do these things because Aboriginal people are not capable and they don't, you know, they're not doing the right thing, blah, blah, blah.
We've got another caller on the line. Welcome to Let's Talk. Who have we got?
Yeah, hi, Tiger. It's Joy here.
Yes, Joy.
Tiger, I'm not an Aboriginal woman. I'm a white woman, but I was fortunate enough to work and nurse out in the Pilbara in Western Australia. And when I went out there, I had no idea in the world what it was all about. I had none at all. So when I got out there, I learnt. I sat down with the Aboriginal women, and I can tell you, as a 60-odd-year-old, I learnt so much from them. Now, one woman out there became a very, very close friend of mine. She taught me about her heritage. I had no idea about my heritage, apart from, like one of the ladies was saying before, we know who our grandparents are and maybe our great-grandparents. Other than that, we know nothing. But these Aboriginal women, they knew everybody in the Matuk tribe, mob. They knew everybody around them. They knew all the children, their names. We used to go out and get Spinifex in my ute. I'd take them out, and, you know, people hated me for it. The white people, they hated me going out doing it. They said, don't put Aboriginal women in your car. And I said, well, tough luck, I am.
Good on you.
And they taught you feel better
as a human being, as a person, for that experience?
Tiger, it took me all my time to come back here with my husband to live here on the coast because I wanted to stay there. I loved it. It was spiritual. What these ladies are saying today is it's like sitting down talking to the ladies over there. We had a lot of fun, but more than that, it was spiritual. They taught me how to be a woman. It was an amazing, and I was there for 3 years.
You're very fortunate, Joy. Thanks for sharing it with us, eh? Well done.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that. You have a good day.
You too. Thanks,
Michael. What a nice experience that would have been for Joy.
It's a lovely experience.
It's lovely.
Wonderful experience.
We've heard that so many times, from different people over the years.
Mm.
Yes.
When they've been with Aboriginal people, live with, or whatever, you know, they've...
They develop such a greater understanding not only of themselves but of the country they're living in and the importance of relationships with other human beings and most importantly with their own families.
Mm.
What are your thoughts now on regarding identity around the Bolt case where he was making some stupid remarks and comments and criticisms and denying people their Aboriginality? I mean, who does he think he is? But also raising that question, well, look, you look more Irish and Scottish and English. Why aren't you identifying there?
That is the most ridiculous bloody argument, I always think. Because, I mean, Aboriginal people, nobody is going to reward you for, you know, nobody is going to think that, yes, you've got Scottish heritage and English heritage. Oh, well, we'll have to treat you differently now. That's the last thing they bloody will think. Do you know what I mean? Doesn't matter how many other ones you get got in you. The first and only thing they see is that you're Aboriginal.
Mm.
And that's what you get judged on. And, I mean, you may or may not be very proud of... I know people who are proud of these other heritages. But you're brought up in a family, in this sense of belonging, in an Aboriginal world.
Even if
you know,
you don't
you're not
look
brought
Aboriginal.
Up in a, yeah, no, no.
Even if you don't look Aboriginal.
Yeah,
it's got
you know,
nothing to
like,
do with your appearance now.
Yeah, a lot of my cousins.
It's got nothing to do with your appearance now. Once upon a time, it did have to do with the colour of your skin.
Mm. Mm.
But now it's got nothing to do with the colour of your skin. It's all to do with your cultural upbringing, and that's the important thing. And... as Mary was saying, nobody rewards you for being Aboriginal.
Yes. No, I always remember, I can't think of his name now. Oh, this is a second-hand story. An old activist in Sydney years ago, he was on TV, and some the white interviewer at the time, this is way back in the 70s or something, accused him of denying his Aboriginality when he was younger and all this sort of stuff, you know. And he's told a story about, yeah, that's right, you know, I've been Italian, I've been Middle Eastern, I've been this, I've been that. And I had to do that. I had to do that because, you know, if I'd have told people I was Aboriginal, I wouldn't have got a feed for myself and my family. He said, and shut that bloke up very quickly, because that's the point, you know.
Absolutely.
You choose anything, that's acceptable.
You know? And, you know, that's what's so wonderful about Aboriginal culture. It's so non-judgmental. And I think that's a wonderful thing to be, non-judgmental. And I suppose when I look at someone like Balt, you know, he's really a poor individual, you know. He is. He's a poor individual. Mm. I mean, I can't get angry with him. I can't.
Oh, you can't. You got to feel sorry for him, sort of thing. You know, think he's a poor, sad fellow. He is.
He is.
He's a poor bastard. Really, when you think of it, you know.
Mm. And because what he's done, you know, he has limited his intellect so much that he's making himself a very small man.
He exposed himself by not doing any of the fundamental principles of journalism.
Yes, absolutely.
He's made himself a small man, and that is because he has limited his intellect so willingly, and I don't believe any of us should do that.
He has a limited intellect, but unlimited ambition, I think, because he really did that to stir things up tremendously.
Well, he's got
so as Channel 9
TV
or whoever it was.
Yeah,
that's what he really in the end wanted. Mm-hmm. So be controversial, be this, be that, you know, and... Do you know what I mean? I believe that he's a small man in that sense, unimaginative, and that's what he was aiming for. And that's the easiest thing to get.
And in answering that question, why don't you identify as being your Scottish or Irish or English heritage? What is there to be proud of? Like, when you look around you and see this white system in place, do you really want to identify? I mean, a lot of the white fellas now tuning into this station say, look, we're really ashamed to be white. When we look at how they're treating our own, your people, but also our own mob, when we say, you see the way this country is just there's not too much humanness in this society. There's not a lot there to hold your head up proud and say, well, unless you look beyond Australia, you go back to that.
Well, especially being Australian, I think it's so important for white Australians to be able to embrace the history of this land and the history of what has happened in this land before I think they can start to make moves towards feeling a pride in themselves and in this country. But I think it'll be a long time coming because it means they have to embrace Aboriginal people as the First Nations people of this country, and they find that very difficult.
If we go back in time, only back to the 60s or even beyond, back to the 30s, when the people like Pearl Gibbs, Marge Tucker, Bill Ferguson, Jack Patton, and a lot of those older people that were petitioning the king at the time, I think it was, or the queen or whoever, about the rights, the recognition of the rights of First Nations people in this country. If we look at the community development, if we look at the changes and the achievements for First Nation people across this country, a lot of it stems from the East Coast or those of us that are fair-skinned and suffered the discrimination.
That's true, isn't it?
A lot of it has, but it's spread across the country. You can look at the media, you can look at the legal services, the health services. Yeah. There's a range of things. The Aboriginal grant, study grant thing that came out, ABSCOL, back in the early days. It came from the struggle of people in our situation that looks a lot like us.
Yeah.
But people who can still speak their two or three languages, English is their second or third language, like Best Price, they can benefit.
Well, they do benefit
from these achievements and these changes and these improvements.
That have happened
from
the bloodshed on the streets.
Bloodshed. Arrests and jailings.
Yes.
And they don't realise that. But what has happened to us here, you know, it can happen to them, the things that happen.
Exactly.
And they are happening. And they don't realise it's because of those things that were happening to us here that we got out on the streets and we demonstrated.
And that divisive strategy of the system, of the establishment, they're yellow fellas, they're the radicals, the stirrers. You don't need to be like that.
And look at the position they're in now.
They've got this, what is it, this...
Northern Territory Intervention Legislation.
Northern Territory
Emergency
Legislation.
Response Legislation, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's happened to them.
That's right, eh? Yeah.
The things that we were copying back, you know.
Yeah.
In the 60s and 70s, the Queensland Act, how people were being treated.
Right.
Beyond the Act, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at the last couple of minutes we have. What can people do? We've had a couple of calls this morning about white fellas not feeling connected, not being able to go back, trace their mob identity. What can people do? And not just white fellas, we've got some of our own mob and stuff. The sense of belonging. But can you articulate a little more? Auntie Lil, you said, know where, try to identify somewhere where you feel like is home to you. Does that mean identifying with First Nations or identifying the traditional owners? Does it mean understanding that country and the mob who were the original, the caretakers of country, things like this? What does it mean when you say, well, where do you feel like home and what can people do?
To me, connection to land is a spiritual thing, you know, and that's what I try to encourage white Australians to develop, a spiritual connection to land. It could be anywhere, could be they just feel comfortable on a river, in a park, wherever. But I think that's can be a starting point for them to build up this sense of belonging, because to me it has to be belonging to land. Because that's where the spiritual connections come from. I don't mind where it is, but they can build on that and take their family there and explain to them it feels special to them, they feel connected there, and they can build on that with their families, you know, and friends. And that's what I would encourage people to do. But it's a spiritual connection to land for me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it, the key to it. And it doesn't necessarily rely on ownership of that particular spot or anything like that.
No.
It may be if you've got big property or something like that, but it doesn't depend on it. But another way of looking at it too is that there are only two relationships that are kind of existing for humans and, you know, just simply in existence, and that's the relationship between land and people and then the relationship between people. So having that spiritual relationship with a location, it's actually like the template for you that enables you to have a good relationship with each other, with people. So the relationship with land teaches you to have that relationship with people. And to me, that's the spiritual connection or the spiritual theme that runs right through it that Aboriginal people really elected to have a long time in its development of this country. In what we actually live. So you've got to have the relationship with land first or a place, and it enables you to have this good relationship with land. So in other words, with people. So if you do both at the same time, it fills this spiritual kind of longing. And I see that in white fellows or not any non-Aboriginal people who seem to have like separated themselves from not only their own original place of country or whatever, but from country and therefore from others. The two seem to go together. They're locked in together. And there is a spiritual longing or yearning there, I see. You know what I mean? You can see it quite and hear it, actually, in their songs and films, books, their literature. You know, this spiritual yearning.
Everywhere.
It's reflected everywhere. And it's reflected, I believe, in various mental health pathologies too. I think where, you know, that they have gone right away from relationships, positive relationships with both land and people. You know, so I'd say seek that out, both at the same time.
Very good. We're approaching news time. Thank you very much again for joining us today. I think it's been quite an interesting and stimulating discussion. We had some good callers calling in with their views and statements and things. So thanks, Auntie Little, Auntie Mary.
Thank you, Tiger.
Great to have you in again. That's Auntie Little Watson and Auntie Mary Graham joining us today. That discussion on identity that will be replayed at just after 6 o'clock news this evening. It will be a podcast on our website. You go to the website and click on Let's Talk and you'll see the podcasts of past programs. So check it out, have a listen. I think it's on replay again after midnight as well this evening. So It is important, identity. So look into it. Develop that sense of belonging. Find that piece of land, piece of country where you feel a connection, and you develop your sense of belonging, develop your identity. Know more about First Nations people, the original owners, First Peoples of the planet. Karen Durante joins you tomorrow for Let's Talk. She will host the program. Make sure you join her. Have a great day.